So, Mark, give us an idea. Would you give us a little background, maybe a bit about you, where you're from, and how you got to write this book called The Economics of Happiness?
I'm from Edmonton, Alberta. I was born in Calgary, and the book, The Economics of Happiness, was inspired by my business students, actually at the Bainbridge Graduate Institute near Seattle. They were terrified of economics, and I told them that actually economics is about what we all do, is we're managers of the household, which is what economy means. I came up with the title, The Economics of Happiness, because I knew that we were, this was in 2007 when I wrote the book, that we were going to enter a very bumpy time in the economy, which we saw in 2008, and that we needed a new roadmap to a new economic model based on well-being and happiness. And I explained that the word happiness is not just a fleeting feeling, it actually means the well-being of your spirit from the Greek.
Okay. I happen to speak a little bit of French, and we have this wonderful expression in French called la joie de vivre. Could we say that that's sort of along the same lines?
Yes, or the économie de bonheur.
Ah bon, l'économie de bonheur. Thank you. So, listen, Mark, it's my pleasure to welcome you here and Louise to the studios of Voice of the Shuswap. How did your presentation go today?
I went very well. Last night I had the pleasure of also hearing young entrepreneurs, new entrepreneurs. So today's presentation was really about inspiring Shuswap, Sam and Arm, to think about a new economy, an economy based on well-being, of ensuring that the well-being conditions of all your citizens and businesses is flourishing. The word flourish from the French floris, meaning to flower or to bloom.
Épanouir is another, yes, to blossom. Épanouir means to blossom. I was there last night too, Mark, and Louise was there, I know. Louise actually had quite a hand, I understand, in organizing that whole thing, if not was the main organizer. And I came away, I had planned to go to that and then go to the songwriter showcase. Well, of course, I was hooked, and I stayed for the whole entrepreneur, and I came out of there on a high. Because one of the things that this station, not just me, but many of us have been talking about, and that is economic development and economic activity in Salmon Arm, we're on a bit of a low, and I came out of there thinking, hey, the sky's the limit. We really have all this energy, and the young man who got up from Enactus at the end, I don't even know his name. What's his name, Louise? Oh, she doesn't remember. We'll find it maybe before I'd like to interview him, because I found, first of all, he was a very good public speaker. And it's the high. It's the fact that there's lots of hope, there's lots of ability, there's lots of energy, there's ideas, and there's people that are real entrepreneurs. So anyway, I'm glad to have you here, Mark.
Thank you. I think the evening represented what I believe. I talk about, you know, life is about finding that standing wave of joy. And what I felt yesterday was this would never happen in Edmonton, where you have such inspirational new entrepreneurs getting up, declaring their vision, getting cross-examined by judges who ask some very good and tough questions. But really, the exciting part about building this, revitalizing the community and the economy with all of these new ideas, it's really exciting and important to celebrate.
Louise, you're to be congratulated. The word revitalize is really important here.
Yeah, and I, as much as I'd love to take credit for that whole thing, I have to say it really is a labor of love. You know, takes months to prepare economic development, community futures, and ACTUS. Those students give very generously of their time. There were 16 or 18 local businesses who mentored. There were 25 businesses who sponsored. I think there was over $25,000 donated.
Prizes.
And all I did was help with the website. So, but it was certainly a great event. And I think the best part of it is when you're in business in the Shuswap, a small business, I mean, let's face it, there's nothing small about small business. In fact, small business is the biggest business we have. And, you know, we always... I know as a small business owner, sometimes I feel I'm struggling alone against the wind. But the truth is, last night, those people who stood up on that stage and shared their vision, the love that was coming back from the crowd, that's the kind of thing that can really feed a community. And as businesses, we need to stick together and realize that there are really, it's not just about the money, you know.
No, it's about local participation.
Absolutely. And that's... And that's why we're so happy to have Mark here, because he's helping us get a better grasp, you know, both from the numbers and the theory behind the triple bottom line movement, people, planet, profits. So.
Then, Mark, I know I see you are ready to go ahead. I'd like to hear some of your background. You said you're from Edmonton. Maybe you can talk just a little bit about yourself and then go right ahead into your spiel, if you will, whatever you'd like to say, because I'm not even sure where to start.
I never know where to start, except to say that, you know, I've been inspired by sort of re-examination of the words of our lexicon of economics and business. For example, the word competition means to strive together. The word wealth means the conditions of well-being. And so what we experienced last night was one of the science of happiness says that relationships are the most important thing to the happiest communities in this country. And I see the strength of those relationships. If the word competition means to strive together, I can imagine all the four winners last night actually collaborating together and finding, you know, the right sweet spot of that relational capital that they're building, and that we have a responsibility to support those local businesses in our choices, the way we vote with our loonies, and in terms of voting for well-being and the flourishing of your community. My background, I'm a very, I often describe myself as a recovering economist who used to be addicted to growth, and I took the red pill or the blue pill, it didn't matter, or the 12 steps for economists, and then rediscovered the wisdom. I'm also a forester, so I discovered the wisdom of the forest as a model for our economy. Our economy is this upward sloping GDP curve that has no end in sight, and yet a forest teaches us that life is a circle. And that we have to begin to think and mimic nature, mimic the particular what First Nations people have taught me about life, about the medicine wheel, about the things that actually are the key to harmony, which is a key aspect of the Chinese, and I've worked with China for many years now. So I'm very excited to be here in Salmon Arm. My family misses me. My daughter always says, Dad, what do you do? And I said, I give people new ideas, and she says, don't they have their own ideas? So,
well, yes, we do have some ideas here in Salmon Arm, and Louise is exemplifies that, but it's really nice to have you here, and I'd like to continue on along this line of the economy and some of the things you just said. But before I do, I want to extract a promise from Louise that she will come on the air with me. I'll do an interview, and we're going to talk about L'Entrepreneur in more detail about the eight teams that were there and something about the winners. There was four winners, but even all eight of them are winners, if you will, just by their participation. And to see all those people involved, I just sat there in awe. I thought, hey, this is where it's at. This is how you get a local economy where people are involved. As Mark said, competition, that means cooperation, collaboration, and where people, even when she talked about the girl with the fiber, when she talked about the other places, Falkland, Kamloops, and she didn't talk as though they were competition or going to be hard. No, she talked about collaboration with them. That's beautiful.
And, you know, I think people often, we choose to forget that Salmon Arm is really a big experience in collaboration. I mean, if you think about the Salmar Community Theater, one of the only community-owned theater, the Salmon Arm Golf Course is a cooperative. The credit union is a cooperative that was set up because the orchardists were irritated with a big bank that shall remain nameless. So they started their own bank at the Salmon Arm Farmers Exchange. I mean, that's what we're all about here.
And exactly.
So it's great. And I think we need to revisit those roots. And, you know, one of the reasons Mark is here is because we formed a new society called the Plan B Society, which is based on the triple bottom line business movement and the B Corporation, a new way of looking at the economy and looking at society, and we're hoping to do more of these random acts of radio and all kinds of opportunities to bring in new people to discuss new ideas, to connect people in new and interesting ways. And so we're hoping in the fall at the college, with the support of our community, and even if we got a tenth of the energy that was in the room last night, I think we could have a great conference in the fall. And, you know, farmers talking to businesses, talking to government, talking to churches talking to teachers all together.
Yes, you know, yes, and Voice of the Shuswap wants to be a vehicle to sort of grease that communication and to be just part of it. And I think that's what we started out doing, that these random acts of radio prove it, and this little example today proves what we can do, the flexibility and versatility that we have as a community radio station, yeah. And we feel pretty good about it. Mm-hmm. Anyway, Mark, we still want to, you talked, there was a whole bunch of things, I should have taken some from some notes, but you talk about wealth, and you also talked about that wave. So can you elaborate a little bit more on this whole question of how we measure wealth and happiness, and what did you call the wave of?
Joy.
The wave of joy. Please, expand a little bit on those.
So what came obvious to me in my journey as an economist was that we actually weren't measuring, as Bobby Kennedy said in 1968. He actually critiqued the gross national product, and he said it's not measuring the things that make life worthwhile. All the expenditures in the economy, whether it's on divorce lawyers or cleaning up oil spills, all contributes to the GDP. But the things that actually matter to our happiness and well-being don't count, because no money changes hands. So that was my motivation to rethink this whole economic model, to say, if we address Bobby's challenge, what kind of accounting system would we have? And so I came up with this idea of genuine wealth. Genuine means to live authentically, to, you know, in accordance to what our heart value most. And the word wealth, as I said, means the conditions of well-being. So if we design a new way of measuring what matters, it would be to measure the strength, the well-being of our human capital, so to speak, or
okay, so give me some examples of that human capital, just to put me on course here.
So human capital or human assets is you and I, our health, our physical, mental, even our spiritual well-being. Can we measure a lot of those things? Absolutely. Some of them aren't going to be easily measurable, like happiness, though happiness could be a fleeting, you know, moment-by-moment experience. The second form of capital, the most important one probably, is social capital.
Yes.
The strength of relationships, the level of trust we have for each other. That's what I saw a glimmer of last night. Trust is probably the most precious and important asset, and it doesn't stand on anyone's balance sheets or the municipal government's balance sheet or the national balance sheet. But what if we were to measure trust? What if we were to celebrate it? So a sense of belonging is the most important aspect of the happiest communities in the country. The third form of capital is natural capital, so land. How much soil do you have for growing food? How much food is being sourced locally? What about the forest? What about the wetlands? These things have value. They contribute to our well-being, but they don't count because no money changes hands. And then there's financial capital and built capital, which is infrastructure and things like that.
You mentioned wetlands, and there's a whole group of people in Salmon Arm, including Water, the Wetlands Alliance. TER stands for the environmental response, the economic, or no, the ecological response, the ecological response. You can tell I'm not a member of Water. But at any rate, one thing that they did mention, and it has been mentioned many times, is about, I don't know, it's a pretty high percentage, is that about 85% or higher of the wetlands in British Columbia have been destroyed, about that percentage. And that's sort of scary because in White Lake, I'm proud to say that myself, yours truly, and another guy started a little environmental group called the White Lake Residents Association. And one of the reasons we did is we saw just around the lake, the perimeter of that lake, it's not a huge lake, where people were altering the foreshore. And that foreshore is really, it's like a little wetland, all that vegetation, etc. And when you ask the people about it, it's often based on ignorance. They don't know. We've forgotten the importance of wetlands. We really, you know. Anyway, Mark, carry on. I'm interested in what you have to say. I'm just babbling here.
No, that's the area in which I actually get paid to do this kind of valuation of nature, particularly what we call ecological services. And wetlands are probably the most important of land types. But yet, you know, we pave them over, we build on them, and then realize, oops, 2 years later, you know, we get flooding and seepage, and then we have to invest, of course, to repair the buildings that, in the wetland, all it was doing what it comes naturally. It cleans our water. It's great habitat for nesting waterfowl. And we think it's just a swamp or an irritant. So we have to start paying attention to what these landscapes are actually contributing to our well-being and formally accounting for them in our budgets and our municipal government plans, and not just treating them like they're another development site, but in fact working with nature, working, as we would say, the ultimate form of flattery is to mimic nature.
Yes.
Build buildings that give back, that, you know, give back to nature, not just take. And that's the new paradigm we call biomimicry, is to actually mimic nature by design, because nature is already perfect. We're just trying to, you know, model nature, and we do a pretty pathetic job of it. So
yeah, and I guess what's interesting about economics is that one of the pressures, it seems to me, on people to do these ridiculous things like paving over wetlands is the economic pressure for all of us to have a job. Jobs have become the most important. They become we have to have a job, and that's based on our economic system that doesn't give people enough to live on. So they're actually operating in fear, which is one of the reasons why I was so interested in some of the more socialized countries in Europe, Northern Europe, Finland in particular. And how that affects the people. So maybe you can speak to that, Mark. How does that, the fact that they're covered, cradle to grave? I remember talking to some Swedes recently, about a year ago actually, in the States, and asking them those important questions, and they actually very nicely articulated how the fear isn't there, that the same type of fear that the American people, I think, experience.
So I often ask, do you know what FEAR stands for? It's an acronym.
No.
False evidence appearing real.
Okay.
So what is real? What is the nature of our fear? If we live in fear or trembling of tomorrow, which is part of our economic system, right? The reason we're told to invest is because we invest for a rainy day or for old age. But if we're in a relational economy in which we trust each other, in which we're good stewards of the commons, we know how to share, we know that the truth is abundance, not scarcity. The lie is scarcity. The fear is the lack of tomorrow. The fear is of death. I know a lot of Swedes, too. I wouldn't say they're the happiest people. Even though the Danes rate the happiest, they're also one of the highest users of amphetamines.
Oh, okay.
So are they, when they respond to the happiness survey, are they genuine? I don't know. But they've done something right, which is they have a sense of shared responsibility. And I often go back to the oldest kind of civilization, the Jewish civilization, 585 BC, where they had laws like Jubilee to forgive debts every 7 years, to redistribute the wealth every 49 years. Those are attributes that we could start to borrow from.
I didn't know that.
And these are things I've just learned in my own journey after I woke up and from the trauma of my economic training.
But the trauma, I got it, just a minute, I got to repeat that. The trauma of your economic training. Do you hear that, economic schools out there?
It's called neoclassical economics.
Yes.
But what's wisdom economics? Wisdom economics would counsel that we're measuring what matters, we're treating these assets properly, we're co-stewards of them, we're forgiving debts. And part of the problem with it is important. Work is important to our human well-being. If we don't have meaningful work, if we don't feel joy in our work, we don't wake up in the morning with an expectation that you're following your passion. So work is critical to our happiness. Financial well-being is critical. But most of us don't realize that we're in a global debt. We're global debt slaves to a system we created, and the money system, which we can actually reinvent, recreate. Think about the Jewish laws of Jubilee. But no leaders on this planet right now are talking about Jubilee.
May I just stop you there? Because that's another area of my interest. I don't know if you ever heard of the book, Creature from Jekyll Island.
Oh, yes. I'm steeped in that
Are you?
Knowledge of
the Well, I'm not a student. I'm sure just on the surface, but I definitely want to do a couple of telephone interviews with you about the money system. I've tried to explain to some of my friends how the system works right now, especially the dependence on private banks and how they lend out all this money, all that debt money, and then it all has to be paid back with interest. I mean, it's a big balloon.
It's a big balloon. I tell people, I was just recently in China and Shanghai, and I said, the only country in the world right now which could probably escape this debt explosion is China. Because China, when Sun Yat-sen overthrew the Qing Dynasty, adopted Abraham Lincoln's monetary model. And Abraham Lincoln said the government should create the money for the people without interest, not the private banks.
Exactly. And I think that would go back even to the Jewish that you alluded to. I don't know if it was the Old Testament, but in the Judaism, where they talk about any kind of any interest really is usury. And we've created this system, and the English banks starting about 300-400 years ago, that is really a monster, and we're caught in it.
We're caught in our own ingenuity. Money is a very useful medium of exchange, but it has no connection to anything real. People don't appreciate that. And I tell Americans about a third of your working life will be dedicated to paying interest on the collective debt. That's a waste of human energy. It's a crime against 7 billion people on this planet, and it's completely unnecessary.
That's a really interesting aspect. Boy, we've got lots to talk about. I don't think we're going to get very far today, Mark. But that's another area that I think must be discussed, and there could be, as you know, I'm certain, I'm a member of the Cummer it's called, the Committee on Monetary and Economic, what's the R's?
Reform.
Reform.
I've been a member since 96.
Have you? Yeah. Well, let's talk. Well, we don't have time today to talk about it, but Cummer, actually, apparently Canada's a leader in the world in this economic, monetary and economic reform. A guy named Bill Krem, is it? Bill Krem, he's in his 80s?
Yeah, I think he's like 90 now.
And the idea is, of course, stemming from what we've just finished discussing, this whole idea of the banking system that Canada created, the Bank of Canada, in, what, 1936 or something? And we'd hardly use it right now. It's hardly really being used other than to try and control, what, monetary policy or fiscal?
So what I'm arguing is let's support what we already have. We have our credit unions. You have your credit union here. Support it. In Alberta, we have our own bank. It's called the Alberta Treasury Branch. It was Eberhard created in 1935. We own this bank. Let's support it. And let's become each other's bankers.
Yeah.
Why is our money leaving and going into a black hole in Toronto, New York? Most of our investment dollars leave our communities. Even if 5% or 1% stayed in Salmon Arm, you'd have more prize money for last night.
And I don't know what percentage SASCU, Salmon Arm Savings and Credit Union, represents, but let me tell you, they mentioned it last night, and we know just how much is recycled into this community via SASCU. And so I hear you. And by the way, I must mention that SASCU is one of the major contributors to this radio station. Voice of the Shuswap would not have happened without the financial assistance of Salmon Arm Savings and Credit Union.
Right, and we own the Salmon Arm Savings and Credit
Union.
So really, it's down to us.
Yeah.
And so it's important that we remember language, things like us and them, customer versus member. I mean, we have to get the dialogue right, and we have to put things in the right context. So
I think the corporation has a lot to do with this, but I won't go there. Go ahead, Mark. You wanted to say.
I just have one more challenge to the board members on SASCU that they should read my report that I did for Van City, which I studied the JK Members Bank in Stockholm in Sweden, the only interest-free bank in the world outside of Islamic banking, because Islam forbids usury.
No kidding.
Interest. Yes.
That's interesting.
Why do you think Islam is such a threat to the West?
Is that, that's probably
that's
the main
my theory.
Yeah, I wouldn't doubt it.
But so when I delivered this report to Bob Williams, who was the chair of Van City, I said, you know, Van City could operate without charging interest. Wouldn't that be imaginative, creative stroke of genius to outcompete all the big banks? And they didn't get it either. But the point is, the idea is still alive. There's an operating model in Sweden. It was designed by not economists, by engineers who know flow, who understand, like water, money must flow,
yes,
stagnate, and be brooked. So this is the model of the JK Bank, and I challenge any credit unions in this country to consider creating an interest-free bank in their communities.
That would be really interesting. Well, that's another program, maybe. What do you think, Louise? You think we could get working on that?
Yeah, maybe we'll have lunch and try this afternoon.
You talked about joy and how people... it seems that as we cooperate more, if we can measure joy and happiness, then they feel better when they cooperate more and collaborate. and they...
You could see it. I often jokingly say, I'm here, I'm the happiness auditor. I walk into your cafe and we do like a happiness checkup, and we'll even do a makeover for you, like tongue-in-cheek, of course.
Yeah.
But, you know, I have a dear friend who beat leukemia 25 years ago. Doctor gave him a six-month death sentence. His name's Orest. And, you know, he said, every day I wake up, it's Christmas. Are you following your life or just... Are you leading your life or just following it around, he says. And I have this theory. I've said I'm going to stop apologizing for being an eternal 8-year-old. Because, you know, at that delicate time in your life, 8, 7 to 10 years of age, you put your pursuit of joy in the closet. I swear. And it's that time when you get to puberty that your happiness starts to decline, and then you start getting examined in junior high and high school, and you're expected to perform and get marks and scores, and yet where do we put the pursuit of our own joy except somewhere, and we have to rediscover it. So these are all the challenges that that we face as,
yeah.
as individuals, as businesses.
I hear you. I think I just want to show you how I hear you. In my own case, I experienced a real tragedy in my life about a year and a half ago, and one of the things that has happened because of that tragedy and through my work as a guest with the Hospice Society is I'm learning a little bit about what's important in life. What are the things that really count? You've just touched on some of them. And I think we have to be reminded almost on a daily basis because we are so bombarded with other distractions or, you know, that expression, we live longer. How does it go? You probably know the expression. Even though we're living longer, we die as though we've never lived. And we're afraid of death because we don't seem to really be experiencing or feeling the joy of life. As your friend said, every day I wake up, it's a gift. And a part of one of the things that I learned is you live life as though you could die anytime. Now, that's not to scare you. It's to make you live in the moment, for one thing, but also appreciate and be grateful for everything that we have. And First Nations are wonderful about how they teach us that.
I've learned so much from my Aboriginal friends, working with the Inuit, with the Tunaha Kinbasca Tribal Council, with recently in Tahiti with their descendants of the Maori, and learned that what I call the songlines of well-being are alive and exist. Connections between Aotearoa, New Zealand, French Polynesia, Hawaii, and Edmonton. Edmonton actually has the words M-O-N-T-O in them. Monto, which means Great Spirit in Cree.
Oh.
And Edmonton was a very sacred gathering place of First Nations before all the white people came.
Oh, I did something I didn't know.
And so they have a lot to teach us about how they sit in circle. They didn't have money. They used a tiny seashell called a kauri shell, which came from the, guess where? From the New Zealand, from the Maori. So we're connected. And when we pay attention to these song lines of well-being, we will renew those joy lines and rediscover that we're still guided by those ancient traditions and knowledge of the person as a medicine wheel of spiritual, mental, physical, emotional well-being.
I'm sure you're familiar with Wade Davis.
Yes, I've read his...
I haven't read that many of his books, but I went to one of his talks in Kelowna, and he uses many of the expressions you've just used in his... Awe, I think, would be the word of First Nations around the world. Some of the things that he has learned, and you know, he talks about protection, of course, of the natural environment. But this idea that they have so much to teach us if we take the time to listen.
You know, the last time I was here, I think 4 years ago, speaking at the United Church, the only sermon I ever gave in my life because I'm Catholic, so it's kind of weird. But I said, why is it called Salmon Arm? You know, the power of the name of a place, right? What is it? What am I going to see when I come to Salmon Arm? You know, where the salmon?
Yeah, good point. Yeah, it's an excellent point. And there are those who are really working on that and who feel that's a very, very delicate discussion going on in British Columbia. As you know, you probably heard of the Cohen Commission and this whole question. Sometimes we wonder just where are the salmon? Where are they on our priority list? And it appears that forestry Something I learned on a walk through the woods in Squamish, put out by DFO, that the single most important factor in the destruction of the salmon is forestry.
Yeah, I'm a forester.
Would you agree with that? I don't know if that's the truth, but apparently the methods of forestry that we've used over the last 100 years or so, it's the destruction of their spawning beds.
Absolutely. And we know that we've calculated there's a connection between water treatment costs and tree cover in the watershed.
Yeah.
In Calgary, for example. So there's an interest for that. That's the kind of practicality I'm talking about. So if there's more trees in the watershed, upper reach of the watershed, the salmon streams, the trout streams are going to be healthier, and so are your water treatment costs going to be lower. So it's music to engineers' ears.
Boy.
And municipal finance people. But I want to challenge, all Canadians. I think Salmon Arm could be a model of an economy of well-being. What I saw last night was they're the seeds. You're celebrating entrepreneurship. And let's make this country the model for the world. We already are. We're throwing it in the toilet. We're saying we just want to be hewers of wood and extractors of minerals. And it's like, when are we going to grow up and say, we can be this economy of well-being. We already are the model. People come here from all over the world and they find peace and joy and happiness here. And yet, it's like we're throwing it away. And that's my challenge to the Prime Minister, to any leaders, mayors in this country, to let's reimagine and think about an economy of well-being versus just an economy of constant growth and extraction, as if the Hudson Bay Company and its original model and the charter of the British East Indian Company is still very much alive and has never been audited, never been challenged.
Boy, you mentioned a whole bunch of things that are going to get me going here, Mark. Hewers of wood and drawers of water. You don't know how old I am, but 50 years ago, more than 50 years ago, as a young man, I can remember that statement. I can even remember some of the people that were talking about it, but that doesn't matter. Hewers of wood and drawers of water, and I remember asking what it meant. And it really, the explanation was, well, we're just really giving away our resources, whether it be trees, 25 cents a tree we get right now, apparently. It's that bad. We cut them down, ship them to China or Japan, and we get about 25 cents a tree for some of these huge trees.
So You raised something important. We've never, ever had the discussion about the wise use of our natural assets.
Nope.
As a people. We bought the line that we need to extract and export because that's the path to economic well-being. And I would challenge any economist to rethink that. Think about, because the whole basis of happiness, as Aristotle and Aquinas said, was sufficiency of material needs and virtuous action. And virtue is courage, moderation, justice, and wisdom. So those must be the hallmarks of our economy. If we had that discussion around natural resources, we would think twice about extracting more oil out of the oil sands, or just enough to meet our domestic needs, and then think about the export of our surplus so we can help our Chinese brothers and sisters. But not simply for the sake of moving tankers across waters and money changing hands. And that's my challenge too. That's a global challenge.
It is. You again mentioned a whole bunch of things. Louise, I saw you taking notes. What do you have to say about Salmon Arm being a possible role model for other places in Canada? Give me your thoughts on that, Louise, please. Louise Wallace. I'm putting
no
you on the
pressure,
spot.
No pressure.
No.
So really what motivates me is, yes, I'm a business owner. Yes, I earn a living. Yes, I watch the bottom line. And the bottom line gets further to the bottom all the time, I guess. But really, ultimately, I'm a mom. And I have two boys, 8 and 11. And they're getting to that age where they're asking me questions. And I don't find that I can give them the answers. And I really believe that it's our job, each of us, our virtue is to leave this place better than we found it. And I'm concerned that I'm not doing enough to do that. And, there's a couple of things that really challenge me is we're graduating students from post-secondary with record levels of debt. There's housing affordability issues for young families. There's income disparity, and yet as a society, we've never had so much money, actual physical money. So I guess there's two things I think debt is a product that's packaged and sold and promoted and priced, and we're buying it, yeah. You know? And but we have to break free from that, and we have to help our young people. I mean, I can't, you can't get out of bed every day thinking, oh, man, now what do we do? So my goal is, what gets me out of bed in the morning is those two little boys and leaving the place better than I found it, and the young people I work with in my design business, and helping them understand that the world needs them. I taught a college course this year, first time at the business school here in town, and it was so inspiring to see their enthusiasm. And, you know, when the course was over, I said, I just want you to know, no matter what happens, we need you. And wow. I think we forget to tell them that.
I think we do.
And challenge them to say, okay, your turn. We might have screwed it up, but you tell us how to fix it, and we're there.
We're there. And I see Mark wants to add something. Just before I give you the mic, Mark, I want to just mention a little wee bit of hope aside from the Launchpreneur. And I've seen some, in my view, for what it's worth, some real potential there. And he's really interested. And he interviewed a young lady who's a volunteer with the BC Special Olympics. And she was unbelievable. I mean, when I see that and I hear it, it reignites my faith in that generation. They know what's going on, and we just have to provide them with a little bit of leadership and some of the resources they need to carry out what they see needs to be done. Mark, you wanted to say something. Please don't let me interrupt. I do that quite well.
I think, Corey, you're on to the crux and Louise about, you know, here we are straddling our young people, our children with student debt. I don't know how much student debt you had when you,
none.
Whether you even graduated with a degree. I graduated 3 degrees with no debt. I lived with my parents in Edmonton. You know, tuition was $300 a year.
Exactly.
And today we're in a knowledge economy. We say, you know, you have to go to university to raise the level of post-secondary education skill set. And yet, average students are graduating with $25,000 in debt. Unnecessary, stupid. We should be actually paying them to be in university. Literally, if money is invested in what we say we think the future economy is, then we should be literally paying them to go to school, because really what they're foregoing is an opportunity to maybe be a productive member of the economy. What about credit unions giving 0% loans to students and forgiving those, you know, forgiving half of it if they're productively employed within a year?
Or if their marks are up, you know, it's
their
like
marks
a,
are up.
Yeah. It's like giving them, not a bursary, giving them a scholarship.
Yeah.
You know, I love, I don't want anybody to think that this is some sort of a communist plot or something, you know, but I want to make one comment.
Plot.
I want to make a comment here that actually deals with this election, if I may be allowed. John Cummins, I happen to know him. He's the leader of the BC Conservative Party. And when I lived in Tawasin, I got a chance to talk to John on a number of occasions. And one of the things, this is the BC Conservative Party. He said we should have free education right through post-secondary, all the way. That's John Cummins. So don't anybody believe that what we're talking about here is some sort of a left-leaning, this is just progress, and it makes a lot of sense. When you talk to me about debt, I didn't do all my post-secondary, but I did some, and then I went into technical training, but I never came out of there with any debt. In fact, they paid me to go to school. In my case, I was an air traffic controller. But I hear what you're saying, and there's so many things that Louise also alluded to that we've got a lot of work to do, I think, Mark.
Well, also, we're looking at each other in the mirror. Where do you think our money's invested right now?
Yeah.
You know, it's invested in some stocks or some portfolio, some mutual fund. Is any of that working locally? Is any of that going to kids in your college? No.
No.
I mean, why not? Let's just begin to explore those opportunities. Bring back the money. I had this idea for Greece. My colleague said, what are we going to do for Greece? I said, it's going to start with a hashtag from Calgary, and it's going to call all Greek people to pull your euros out of every ATM. And guess what you're going to do? Are you serious? They said, I said, I'm serious. I said, you pull all the money out of those ATMs, and on a Monday morning, you go into your bank, and you pull all the euros out of your account, and you hand it over to the government, and they give you a bottle of ouzo and you know, some Dolmades to get you through the week. And guess what? You've called a bluff, and the whole thing changes, and you go back to drachmas. That's how courageous we'll have to be. And I will say, you know, life's the story of money is in the Wizard of Oz, which stands for OZ Dot, Ounces of Gold, Neil and Brooke Road, and Mary Poppins, where the young boy says, "Give me back my tuppence," and it's a classic run on the bank. And that's how simple this could be.
A classic run on the bank. Well, again, that's going to be the topic of another program, because we're going to talk about that. We talked a little bit about finance on one of these programs, but we didn't talk about monetary policy and monetary and economic reform that you've just alluded to, and a run on the banks. And it's going to take a little bit of doing, but maybe we'll start here in Salmon Arm. What do you think, Louise? We can have Salmon Arm dollars or something?
That's right. That'd be great.
Like the great spawning.
The great spawning.
Bring it back home.
That's right. 7 million salmon can't be wrong. So,
no.
I guess, you know, there are, when I'm inspired by days like today when people get together and share ideas and conversations, and there are things, you know, for listeners at home to do. Like, for one, you could buy Mark's book, The Economics of Happiness.
Where can they get it in
Salmon? You can get it on Amazon. You can download it on iTunes. Okay. You know, just Google it. And then the other thing is, if you have, see what happens with this.
Go to your library.
Or go to your library.
Hey, it's in the library, I'm sure. And if it isn't, I'm going to make sure it is on Monday. It is. I'm being told it is.
And then the other thing, I mean, I think it's interesting that Steve, you brought up the whole, this isn't a communist plot or a revolutionary plan. This is just about getting informed. And I feel that a lot of people will jump to that, oh, well, that makes you a socialist, which is not. I have trading in economics. I'm middle of the road. I manage my household. I manage my business. I think it's about getting informed. And there's lots of resources online. You want to understand how the world works, Google it and do your research and come up with your own opinions, because this isn't about us telling anyone what to do or anyone telling us what to do. It's about being informed. And so we are sort of slaves to consumer culture, and it's time to step away and think, okay, wait, is this really working for me? And if it's not working for you, there's something you can do.
That's the starting point, is trying to get away from Margaret Thatcher's TINA. TINA stood for There Is No Alternative. There is alternatives, lots of them. And you start locally, and you do it locally, and if it expands a bit, great. But we have to survive and cooperate locally. And last night, I was really happy to see not only some people from Voice of the Shuswap who were at the Launchpreneur, including one of the judges was from Voice of the Shuswap, but some of the people from agriculture, and that's another subject. There are people here in Salmon Arm, John, I'll mention his name, John McLeod. I had him in here once, and I had Russ Polson once in here, and we were talking about agriculture, and the city wants an agricultural strategy. But anyway, I think we're getting some signals that maybe we're running out of time. Somebody's sending me some signals, and I don't even understand a word they're saying. I see that it's creeping up on 11 o'clock. But, Louise, can you understand what they're trying to tell us?
Yes, I'm getting an important signal here. And I have, yeah. So just to remind you, if you want more information about places to go and things to find out, Mark is here as our guest. It's the new Plan B Society.
Oh, yes.
Plan-B.ca. There's information you can find there. Please do get in touch.
People.
Business.
And environment.
Exactly.
Listen, Mark, I'm going to give you the last word here before we go off the air or we turn on some music. It's just coming up to 11 o'clock. It's a beautiful day out there. I know some people may want to go outside, but Mark, it's a pleasure having you here, and you have the last word.
It's a great pleasure. I encourage, one thing we've done in our neighborhood was we've created a cocktail cooperative. So every Friday at the end of the week, we get together and talk about life, have a glass of wine. Sometimes we have salons, dinner parties, where we talk about the fun, sometimes cerebral stuff. So I encourage everyone in Salmon Arm to think about creating, it doesn't have to be cocktails, but create your own little neighborhood cooperatives and conversations about things that really matter and about life, about joy.
And maybe a lot of people are turned off by politics, but unfortunately we have this system, and my last word, if I can be allowed to just reinforce, there's an election on right now, and whether you like it or not, that's the system we have. It's called first past the post. There are four candidates. I don't care who you vote for, but get out and vote. And that makes a difference. I one little story. Mark, you have the last word. Go ahead.
My challenge to any wannabe MLA is, do you have a well-being economy platform agenda?
A well-being platform or economy agenda. Hey, there's something we can throw out. If I get a chance to interview them again, I might. There is a chance. We'll see how much time is available.